ahead of myself, but I can now say our final presentation of the morning is by Rolf Mandel on characteristics of buried alluvial paleosols dating to the Pleistocene-Holocene transition in semi-arid western Kansas. Rolf?
I was worried that I was getting ejected before I had a chance to say something ridiculous.
That wouldn't happen.
I wanted to begin by commenting that I met Dr. Allen in 1973. I was an undergraduate at the University of Texas, and my mentor, Kurt Sorensen, who's a soil geomorphologist, said, "Let's get in the car. We're going to go meet Dr. Allen, look at some soils." And we drove to Junction, Texas, in the Edwards Plateau region, and so I was anticipating this field trip, and we got there, and he had some shovels and picks, and took us up to a high terrace and pointed at the ground and just told me to start digging a hole. And so I'm thinking, ditch digger, soils geomorphologist, what am I going to become here? And so that was actually my first soil pit and my last. I learned, as you'll see in my talk today, to become very good at finding natural exposures, cut banks, road cuts. And it certainly cured me of many ideas of becoming a ditch digger. The other thing I wanted to say is that whenever conversations with friends come up about Dr. Allen, I've always referred to him as the type section for a gentleman and a scholar. I firmly believe that. Okay. See if I can figure out the details here. Now, I put this tornado in here. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's from Tornado Alley, but this is actually part of my talk. The area I'm going to be discussing is in the Central Great Plains, and to get tornadoes in that area, you need cyclogenesis. And cyclogenesis there is generated by typically a collision of Pacific or sometimes Arctic air with Gulf air that generates very intense storms, produces typically a lot of rainfall in a short duration, occasionally tornadoes. But the point I want to make here is it does often generate high magnitude floods on the high plains. And if you look at some of the modern floodplains, you see a lot of stratified sediment that reflects all the sediment that's being deposited by those high to mid-magnitude flood events. This is about 4 meters, and there's actually historic artifacts coming out of the bottom of this that dated to the turn of the century. So it's a lot of sediment that accumulates rapidly. But what I want to really point out is what you don't see there. You don't see any soils. Well, it's obviously very young, but it's aggrading very rapidly. You just don't have periods of stability. And we look at some of the late Holocene sections of Valley Fill in Kansas, and we often see this sort of scenario where you have many meters of stratified sediment. And this little area where you can see I've been digging down here yielded a log that dated by radiocarbon methods to about 1,800 years ago. And this is about 9 meters of sediment above it. So a tremendous volume of sediment deposited by probably high magnitude flood events. And again, what you don't see are any buried soils in it. In contrast, you will occasionally see soils look like this. And this is sort of my poster child of a cumulic soil in late Holocene sediment. And this is all A horizon. This is a long shovel well over a meter long. So it's an over-thickened A horizon. And there's archaeological material all through it. And so I can just tell you from the bottom to the top, we're looking at about 600 years of slow sedimentation. That's what I want to emphasize. If you've read Peter Berkland's book, Soils and Geomorphology, he devotes a lot of time talking about how cumulic soils form. That the key is you have to have really gradual sedimentation, and soil development keeps up with it. So they're occurring simultaneously, both sedimentation and pedogenesis. And oftentimes these soils will have characteristics of both pedogenic and geogenic. But the thing, again, what I want to emphasize here, this is really important, what I'm going to be saying, talking about the early Holocene into the late Pleistocene, is that big floods will not favor this sort of soil development. The big flood came later, which buried the soil. Okay? And that's really an important component of this presentation. So you really have to have slow sedimentation. The region where I've spent about the last 20 years of my life studying is the Central Plains of Nebraska and Kansas. And I'm going to focus more on Kansas. And there's a very steep precipitation gradient going from east to west. And I'm going to really focus on this area in the western part of the state, the semi-arid. I'm going to cheat a little bit and go into the dry subhumid region. And we're going to be talking here mainly about short grass prairie and a little bit of mixed grass prairie, but most of the sites I'm going to show you are short grass. And if we look at this climate record from ice cores from Greenland, I'm sure many of you have seen this diagram before, what I want to emphasize here is I'm going to be focusing on the Pleistocene-Holocene transition, which is this period right in here. And, of course, this includes the Younger Dryas, which is shown as being a cooler event and also a fairly dry climatic event. But I'm going to also show you pre-Younger Dryas and post-Younger Dryas in this transition period. Okay, you show all my study sites in Kansas, going into Nebraska, and I'm not going to be able to cover all these in the amount of time that I have. So I'm really focusing on the sites out on the western high plains. And I'm going to say something briefly about high-order streams, because I'm really going to focus on the draws. First of all, we don't have many high-order streams out there, the Arkansas River and the Cimarron, but I've got a study locality in the North Fork of the Solomon, and I'm going to also show you one in the Saline River. And this is fairly typical of what we see. In fact, in all of the high-order streams across the entire Central Plains, going down into the lower part of the section, these ready carbon dates were all determined on decalcified soil organic carbon. But we see we're in the Younger Dryas here, 10-6, and it's this big, thick cumulic. Actually, there's two soils. There's one here and there's one here that are welded together. But these are mostly, you're looking at A horizons with a little bit of B horizon development, and then sedimentation rapidly increases, and you get these wimpy soils above it. There's a unconformity here going from the early Holocene to late Holocene, but this is fairly typical for these higher-order streams. But again, what I want to emphasize is these dark, organic-rich cumulic soils that span that Pleistocene-Holocene boundary. North Fork of the Solomon River, same thing. You see this big, thick, cumulic A horizon, a little bit of BK horizon at the bottom. But again, a little bit pre-Younger Dryas, through the Younger Dryas, and then we get into the middle Holocene. And again, very weak soil development above it. But this is a very common characteristic of these soils and these higher streams along the Pleistocene-Holocene boundary. Alluvial fans, I'm going to say something very briefly there. I just want to show you a fan down in the southern part of the western high plains, and I'm going to take you up to the northern part. We're going to begin here at the Adams Ranch alluvial fan. It's a pretty wimpy fan compared to what you've seen in the mountainous regions of the west, but this is about as good as it gets in Kansas. There's the fan head trench. The distal end has been removed by the Cimarron River, but it created a really nice outcrop to look at. You can see these buried soils, and we zoom in on them, and it goes back into the earlier part of the record, into the late Pleistocene, late Wisconsin, and let me back up. But what I want to emphasize here are the ready carbon ages and the soils. There's big, thick cumulic A's there, there, and there. These soils are pretty much welded together, forming a petrocomplex spanning from about 12.6 to about 9,000. Then post 9,000, you see lots of stratified sediment above it. If we go from there to right up here in northwestern Kansas along Beaver Creek, small alluvial fan, we're going to look at this lobe here. Here's the Younger Dryas, 10750, 10390. That's buried by yet another soil that has cumulic properties, 9290. This is a rare middle Holocene soil, and then rapid sedimentation above it. And if we look, what's interesting, we look at the depth function of the organic carbon. It actually not only is irregular, which is typical of cumulic soils, but actually the amount of organic carbon increases with depth, drops off in this B horizon, then also increases in depth again. This may be related to rates of sedimentation, that it was slower in the lower part of those A horizons. It may be related to high water tables. There's a couple of scenarios. If I had more time, I'd go in greater detail. But this is a very common phenomenon. Okay, what I really want to talk about are the draws on the high plains. So I'm going to begin down this area just north of the Arkansas River. And so we're high in the drainage networks. We're up in these very upper ends of these tributaries that are typically dry throughout the year. You only get water in these when you get big rainfall events. And again, lots of nice exposures. And this is what we typically see. Again, looks very much like the radiocarbon chronology I showed you in the high-order streams, and even more important, these cumulic soils, these big, thick A horizons stacked on top of each other, forming these petrocomplexes as old as 11.7 up to about 10,200, and buried with what I think is mostly late Holocene alluvium. We're going to go from there. I'm going to take you back up to the northwestern part of the state, again along a draw. Very similar story. 10.860 or 8.80, so we're at near the beginning of the Younger Dryas, and there's three soils all welded together, all organic rich, all very cumulic. And then after about 9100, buried, rapid sedimentation, sealing this package of late Wisconsin through very early Holocene. I want to focus on an area, the Canerado locality near the Kansas-Colorado border, where I've spent about the last 10 years looking at a series of archaeological sites. Much like Vance Holliday, I spend a fair amount of my time working with archaeologists looking for the earliest evidence of humans in the Great Plains. And there's a cluster of three sites at this locality, and I'm going to briefly go through all three of them. I'll begin with the one the furthest left, this site, and I'm going to take you to 101, and finally at 106. I'm standing on the uplands looking into Middle Beaver Creek Valley, and I'm going to show you this section. You may be able to see there's a buried soil that rises up out of a paleo channel here. And so this is the first terrace of Beaver Creek. And here's the exposure. This was created by channelization of the stream. And what's most striking here are these thick, dark cumulic soils, actually two of them, that are welded together. I'm going to begin by taking you to the bottom of the section, because in the very bottom of the section there were remains of American camel here and also a mammoth. And that got me excited because I thought perhaps this was maybe even a Clovis occupation. At this point in time, we had never recorded a stratified Clovis site in Kansas, so I was thinking Clovis. And then here I am picking around looking for some artifacts. The date actually turned out to be 12,375, which is Clovis, the oldest radiocarbon dates go back to about 11,500. So this is pre-Clovis in age, and some of the bone modifications suggest there's been human action. There's some spiral fractures, impact features, but no artifacts. And you'll never convince the archaeological community that this is a pre-Clovis site unless you have lithics. And so it's a possible pre-Clovis site. But what's interesting is what's above it is really the first stratified both Clovis age and Folsom component that's in that buried soil. And the basal date from this A horizon, 10950 up to 10370, this is what I call the Canerado Paleosol. There's another soil above it that goes into the early Holocene. As I said, these are pretty much welded together. And so, again, look at the organic carbon content. It actually increases with depth through these soils. And this is the stable carbon isotopes determined on pedogenic carbon, and it's a fairly stable record, less than one part per mil fluctuation through this whole period, suggesting the climate was relatively stable during that period. Quickly, I'm going to jump up over to 101, and we're going to look at that section. It's very similar radiocarbon dates. In fact, that is literally the beginning of the Younger Dryas. And again, a big thick cumulic soil. And the dates, radiocarbon dates, are very similar to what we saw in the previous locality. And again, not much fluctuation. It shifts to slightly more C4, suggesting warmer and drier as we get up through the top of the section. And then finally, site 106, we're going to look at this section. There's that prominent cumulic soil, a close-up of it. Bison bone here, again, the dates are very consistent, 11,000, so beginning of Younger Dryas to 9,000 radiocarbon years ago. And we were fortunate that the phytolith preservation was excellent. Carlos Cordova at Oklahoma State looked at the distribution and frequency of poeds, which are your C3s, which are cool season grasses, versus C4s. And you see that as we get up into this, there's this shift from the cool season to the warm season grasses. So basically, pre-11, more of a woodland, and then post-11, we see the shift into more of a grassland environment based on both the phytoliths and the stable carbon isotope record, which is shown here, also supports that. So to end, if we're to go back in time to about 12,500 to 11,000, and this is in radiocarbon years, this is pretty much what the environment would have looked like. Of course, you'd have had different animals than what you have today. You would have had mammoth. We know that there were camel. But it was, a very quiescent fluvial environment, much like cienegas that you see today in the southwest. And you can imagine these thick organic-rich alluvial soils developing. And even as we go from 10,500 to 10,000, it's still a quiescent environment, a cienega-type environment. Hardwoods start coming in, much more grass. And again, this would favor the development of these cumulic soils. Post 9,000, basically, this landscape got rapidly buried. So, in conclusion, in stream valleys across the Central Plains, cumulic soil development spanned the Pleistocene-Holocene boundary from about 12,000 to 9,000 radiocarbon years, and continued as late as about 8,200 in some valleys. The cumulic soils are characterized by overthickened A horizons and weakly to mildly developed BK or BG horizons. And the ubiquitous cumulic soils indicate that moderate to high magnitude flooding did not occur in the Central Plains during the Pleistocene-Holocene transition, including the Younger Dryas. That atmospheric mechanisms that form middle latitude cyclones were not in place until about 9,000 to 8,200 years ago. And basically what I'm saying is the jet stream during that transitional period was further to the south. This is what steers those mid-latitude cyclones and brings those high-magnitude floods into that region. And as it shifted northward by 9,000, it brought in the mechanisms that resulted in the burial of those soils. And I would argue that if you were a Paleo-Indian living at that time, it's highly unlikely that you would have seen one of these. That's the cyclogenesis wasn't there until about 9,000 radiocarbon years ago. So basically what I'm saying is I'm using soils evidence here to talk about weather and climatic phenomena. So I appreciate your attention at this late hour right before lunch. Thank you. Sections I've showed her that where I cleaned them off, you know, she keeps raising my life insurance policy.
Any other questions for Rolf?
Mickey.
Could you explain why the Holocene record is often not preserved in
these stream valleys? I think because we're seeing that shift in the ultrathermal, that dry episode, that we see a lot of instability created in those streams, lots of lateral migration and also entrenchment that often truncates the early Holocene record. And what's interesting is we see that missing record preserved in alluvial fans, which tells you a lot of sediments coming out of these tributaries and accumulating in the fans. That's where the missing record is actually preserved. Yes?
Thank you, Rolf.
Okay, thanks.
And there were two presentations that...